Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm talking to Deborah Emmon. She represents a company called Sullivan Street Press, which has attracted my attention for reasons that we will talk about in an article in Publishing Perspectives about something that they've created called the Itinerant Book Show. Hi, Deborah. How are you?
I'm good, David. How are you?
Good. So, as I understand it, you're a writer, I think a fiction writer.
Absolutely. I actually write everything, but I focus right now on fiction because I'm writing the second novel in a 4-series book collection called Skags. And now we've already published Skags at 7, and I'm working on Skags at 18, which is due out the end of this year.
Is it about a particular person?
Yeah, the Skags character continues. It's a series that began a few years ago, which sort of got me into the publishing business to begin with as a publisher, as opposed to just being a writer or working for other publishers. And she's at 7, this one's at 18 that's coming up, then she'll be 30, and then she'll be 45. And it's a series that focuses on the awakening, rather than there ever being a real coming-of-age moment. There are specific moments in this woman's life where she's coming of age again and again and again.
Right. And is this, these are published as e-books?
Skags at 7 was our big mistake, and we tried it first as a bound book, and I learned my lesson the hard way about why e-books are so important. And so it is an e-book. We actually have a free download of the Skags at 7 e-book in both PDF and EPUB versions, which you can get off of our website, which is sullivanstreetpress.com. And all other books from now on, we will never again publish bound books.
So, and maybe you could talk about that just a little bit before we talk about
sure.
other things.
Well, I mean, it sort of leads into why we did the Itinerant Book Show. Learning the lesson of what is really wrong with publishing bound books in this age is the environment is really sorely stressed in order to, take care of, produce, and protect bound books. It eats up fossil fuels, it takes up land, it just, we need these roads, we need the airport, all of the things, and it eats up trees. There's just none of this that makes any sense anymore. And we also believe that the time has come technologically for a new kind of Gutenberg era, where now people can actually learn to be both self-published as well as artistic in how they craft what is going to become the future of the e-book. So it's a much more democratic, which fits into more of our political background as well. We're more progressive. We just believe in doing things that are going to change and alter the status quo and call into question the gatekeepers in the way in which sort of a more media elite were the gatekeepers for who could be published and why they could be published and how they would be sold and the whole... I think of it as a monopoly of our reading habits by a group of people who don't necessarily represent what I would like to read. But that also then sort of focused my attention on why there were books being published that nobody knew about and needed to know about if we were going to continue having a democracy, which was part of the seed for the Itinerant Book Show.
Well, so why don't we actually go right into that, because I think it's an interesting idea. Now, with the Itinerant Book Show, what you do is you select books
right.
from books submitted to you or books you found, books
right.
you like, I assume.
Right. I've read all of the books that are in the show. So I'm not a natural salesperson, so for me it has to be something I've read and enjoyed and want to share with somebody else, which is why they're in our stock for the Itinerant Book Show. And they also had to be a small enough group because I drive a Prius and I can't, take every book that I love that's being underserved and take it with me as I drive between here and Iowa.
So what you do is you select books based on books you like or you think are important.
Right, and that have been underserved. In other words, small presses that just don't have the money to promote their books at all. We have an author who was published by Random House, and they never did any real promotion of this book. I have to tell you, every time I go out on the Ed Tinrin Book Show, her book sells. And it's a shame. I mean, we can't even carry enough copies to really help her, but we do get the word out a bit.
Right. Well, and that's partially, I mean, I think that's one of the impulses that is was behind some of the most successful periods in bookselling.
Right.
Which, you know, there was, I actually think there was a sort of brief golden age of bookselling, and
mm-hmm.
that was somewhere from, you know, the early 70s to the early 90s,
mm-hmm.
When there were literally hundreds, if not thousands, of independent bookstores
right.
That served many, many different communities. And there were also, as you know, you've alluded to, there were bookstores that served other communities within our community.
Right.
And that era is ended. But during that period, many booksellers really sold on their enthusiasm. They were not, in fact, really business people. They were
right.
readers who felt that it was important to talk about books
right.
and to create kind of miniature communities. So what you're doing, in a sense, is returning to that era or that impulse.
Yeah, and I think it's more the impulse and also just the sense of wanting to become, in some small measure, you know, a part of communities that I drive through, because I go between where I live in Queens to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, several times a year because we have business there. And I began because I was covering or trying to cover what was happening in the after the flood that occurred in June of 2008. And so after the initial trip out there in September of 2008, I realized I'm going to be doing this a lot. And I don't want to be just sleeping in a motel room and having absolutely no connection to these towns that I pass through.
So how do you choose a town to stay? I mean, how do you, you know, what are the logistics? How do you make connections and
places? You know, it's so arbitrary. It's an interesting problem for us because initially I had no idea how you do this. I was like, what do you do? And so I plotted out what would be the three places I could stop to do three days between here and Iowa, because it's about 1,100 miles. So that's a lot of driving. And so I stopped the first time in Clarion, Pennsylvania, then I stopped in Toledo, Ohio, and then I made it all the way to Cedar Rapids. But because Cedar Rapids is so close to Iowa City, which has wonderful bookstores but also has a writer's workshop, I didn't want to focus at all on that area because we weren't going to be serving an underserved community either. But as it turned out, we ended up having a couple of shows in Cedar Rapids in a jewelry store. Bookstores don't work for us because they already order books, so we're a kind of competition. The venues we've ended up in are people's homes, coffee houses, and this jewelry store, and we're trying to become part of a community centered around another jewelry store that's also an art gallery in Iowa City. So there's lots of ways to, so as it were, you know, put yourselves into communities. It's difficult. Most of the people who really respond to us are other writers. They get what we're trying to do. Either they're working on a manuscript and they know how difficult it is to get published, or they have already had books published, and their books are sitting in their storage lockers. They don't have anybody to distribute them anymore. Some of them are poets. Some of them are novelists. It's such a sad, as it were, business. And it's funny because when I talk to Ed, who's one of the editors for Publishing Perspectives, we were practically crying about how difficult it is for some writers to get their work into people's hands. That they just book. Writers are not particularly good business people. Rarely are they. Do they understand the publishing business at all? And they don't feel it's their job to understand it. And I disagree totally with that perspective. And one of the things I talk about when I do the show is I give them some history of the business. I give them some ideas about what they could do now as writers to promote their own work, how they can band together as a community, and why it's really essential that this kind of grassroots interaction among both book writers and book readers are key to keeping a viable book business alive now.
So do you carry books with you?
Yep. We only sell them on, you know, at it's a point of, you know, it's a point of contact sale. We don't do any shipping. We don't have the resources for it.
Right,
I mean,
so
this has never made any money for us, by the way. I mean, this is all right now just complete donation of our time and effort and money to keep this going.
Well, it's like a labor of love, obviously.
Right.
So do you buy the books?
We get the books on consignment,
right,
from the authors. They receive 60% of sale. We get 30%. We offer the audience members a 10% discount.
Right. And so how many books can you carry in a Prius?
I think the total list right now is a little over 30 different titles, and I take maybe, depending on what type of book it is, I can take anywhere from three to five copies per title.
Right. So it's fairly, it's limited by both the size of the car, but also by your, you know, it's, you don't want to be hoisting.
Well, I travel alone. I mean, this is part of, you know, I do everything. I set up the show, I give the show, I sell the books, I try and keep good inventory. You know, we keep a storage locker nearby where we store the books when they're not on the road. It's a lot of schlepping, as it were, and I do it all.
Well, it's similar in some ways to things that have evolved in the music business.
Right.
You know, clearly the many songwriters, singers, performers are like writers, not necessarily prone to understanding how to do business, but
right.
I think that's changed a lot. And you have many, many, many kind of performers and songwriters who bring their CDs with them.
Right.
You know, they go out on the road, they'll go to a small place, maybe it could be a small club that'll have 15 or 20 or 30 people, and then they really make their way, and they're trying to build an audience,
mm-hmm.
you know, essentially one listener at a time.
The good thing about CDs, obviously, is they can sample it online.
Right.
Which is another reason why we like e-books.
Well, so, but how, you, in a certain way, you have this kind of contradiction, because you're carrying physical books.
Right.
But you're promoting e-books.
Well,
And, you know, in a kind of funny way, you know, I agree. I think the sampling is much easier done, especially if books are not going to be in stores and there aren't as many stores.
Right.
The idea of browsing in a bookstore and finding a book that you like because you picked it up at random and read it and liked it,
right,
is kind of gone.
Right.
Or at least going away for a lot of people and certainly for a lot of places. So the theory is then you can sample online, and that's something that Amazon figured out right away with the Kindle.
Right.
You know, you can download 40, 50 pages and really get into a book,
right,
and just, you know, decide whether you like it or not.
Right. Well, they also did it with their bound books as well. I mean, you could sample parts of the book before you bought it, as you would in a bookstore. I think what we kind of copied was, if you liked this, you'll like that.
Right.
So people say, well, you don't really know our community, but we're getting to know you. So we're getting to know what your taste is. So if you say that this book, whatever the book is that I'm carrying with me, is good, we'll take a chance on it. Because they have time to look. They're there in the whatever venue they're set up. They can sit and read. I never stop them from taking, you know, a look at the books, and we sit and talk about them. And it's, I like it. It's how many publishers really get a chance to sit down with the end user, as it were, with the reader, and talk to them about what they like, what their reading habits are, how they buy books. I mean, this is also incredibly valuable information that we are therefore able to use as we plan marketing for our own titles.
Well, I think that actually you hit on something that I think is very important, and that is, and I think I've written about this, and many other people have as well, that the book business for the last 40 or 50 years, for the most part, has been structured in such a way that publishers have no direct contact with readers.
Right.
As a matter of, you know, it's not part of the business structure. I mean,
right,
they can do it now, especially using the web. You can have people visit your site. You can,
right,
get to know your customers. But really, most book publishers are not built around the concept of talking to consumers,
right,
and readers to find out how they react to a particular book, and then or to an idea of a book and then
right.
integrating that into their business.
So right.
you're in a place where, you know, admittedly these are small samples, but still it's direct contact with readers
right.
and you're in a position to know a lot more about what those readers are interested in.
And it's not just that I do this show, but if I stay for any length of time in a town, people invite me to events, like to their book club. And so even if I haven't read the book and I'm just there as a visitor, I listen to how people are discussing books, what it is over the course of time these people have enjoyed reading, why it is they enjoy reading it. They eventually will ask me questions about what we do, and we develop a relationship with people that's old-fashioned, as it were, because they know who we are. There's a face to Sullivan Street Press. You know, we don't yet have enough books for sale. We have some good projects in the works. We just don't, you know, we just have basically, at this moment, my work. But we will have another new book coming out of mine, and then another book coming out in late next spring that's actually tied in with the project I had started in Cedar Rapids about the flood. It's a young adult novel. And one of the great other things that happens is not only do I, because we can't work with an agent, obviously. We don't pay advances. So I'm on the road. I meet authors. I meet people who are seriously committed to their projects. And it's a great opportunity to sit down over a course of several months, because the show comes back and back and back to the same towns. You sit down and you talk to these people over and over. You get to know them. They get to know us. I get to talk to them about what they're doing, and we develop something more substantial than just this, what are you going to pay me and how much am I going to make? Rather, it's about crafting something and for whom this is intended and what's the best way to do it and learning the new technology, because most writers don't even know how to do that. So it's becoming both a teaching experience as well as a way to find new books and new authors.
So do you think that you would develop the community relationships with the people that you are meeting by integrating this into your website in some way, or is that kind of antithetical? I know it's sort of interesting because what you're doing is a form of social marketing
right.
that is really, as you said, old-fashioned
because right.
it's face-to-face,
right.
whereas the web creates all these opportunities
right.
for new ways of interacting with people, but it's entirely electronic and digital.
Right.
We have no relationship to the person other than through the digits on the screen.
Right. Well, I think we're doing both. I think we have this, you know, face-to-face encounter with lots of really interesting people, and then we also have in our website, which I think is incredible and does a very good job of letting people know what we're up to and where we're going and what we're doing. And I have a blog because this is one of the ways in which writers promote themselves. And our other writer has a blog, and we have a Facebook presence and a LinkedIn presence. You know, we do all of the, and a Twitter presence. You know, we do both. But I think you can't do one and not the other anymore. I don't want to lose the contact with a reader would just completely defeat the purpose of what it is we want to do.
So have you had other people, because I noticed, you know, you call yourself the head bookie.
Right.
And of course, hopefully bookie, people understand what that means. You're not taking bets.
Right, I'm not taking bets. I'm selling books.
But does this mean that what you would like to do is find other people who want to do something similar, who like the idea of talking about books and sharing with other people? You know, it's obviously not a vocation. It's not where you're going to make a living doing this.
Well, I actually tend to disagree with that. I think we could get people to make a living from this. The problem is we haven't been able yet to find the people who have the same passion we do to be out there talking about this on a pretty consistent basis. It is, as it were, a commission kind of job. It is completely commissioned.
Sure.
But the point of it is, I always thought of this as the perfect job for the unemployed English major. Because you can discuss books, you can find the books that are right for your community, you can support the local authors who you discover and help to promote, you develop a community, you keep expanding that community because one can't go to the same source every day. You're not going to have that many new books, but you certainly can keep expanding outward from your central location and go into greater and greater concentric circles to meet, greet, talk, read, discuss, and it becomes this, so far this is really the theory and not the practice yet, but it becomes this self-sustaining, involved reader-writer community that makes sure that not only are people involved in the bookies area, but we want to create it also online, because we would put up for that another web page out of Sullivan Street Press to promote what the bookies are doing.
I think that could be very interesting. I mean, what you're essentially creating is a decentralized slightly different form of book club-like activity, only instead of sending books to readers who then self-organize, you're acting as the voice or maybe the town crier for those books.
Right.
And if you build a trust relationship where it's not purely commercial, and that's obviously the line you have to walk. It still has to be based on your passion. You have to love the books.
Right.
And then you have to be able to talk about them in some reasonable way.
Right.
So that people who are readers, the readers that you're talking to and the writers you're talking to can relate to you.
Absolutely. And also what you're also able to do as a bookie would be to, in essence, if you're really good at it, is you understand the book business as it's occurring now, and you help your local writers to become, as it were, do-it-yourself, self-published writers that you then promote. I mean, this is really a way to make this democratization of writing a much more efficient and community-responsive approach to publishing. I don't know if you read this article that Laura Miller wrote for Salon a couple of weeks ago that was just incoherently angry at the slush pile. Yes, nobody wants to read a slush pile. It's nobody's favorite job. But that doesn't mean you equate the slush pile with self-published authors. There are ways that self-published authors can be organized and sold and represented in such a phenomenal way that, and we have all of the resources, and actually people now have the time to do it because we have so many people who are unemployed, who are educated, love to read, and could be involved in this new form of a publishing business. It's just so far we haven't been able to find the people, with whom this really resonates.
Right. Well, the argument within all forms of media is quality and who decides what quality is.
Right.
And the notion that only commercial publishers or scholarly publishers are the ones who have the ability to select and sell and present the best is kind of ludicrous on its face.
Right.
But at the same time, and as you say, there are lots of a tremendous number of highly talented, skilled readers, editors, people who can actually work with writers and who understand what good is and can present it, even though it may not be commercially viable.
Well, I mean, I actually even disagree with that. I disagree with the way they make their decision as to what is a viable book. We tried to work with a fellow who has an incredibly great book. I mean, to me, it's one of the best books I've read in a very long time. It's well written. It's politically progressive. It's exciting. It's visually compelling. And nobody would publish it because it has a sad ending and because nobody knows who this guy is. So to me, those are not exactly great reasons for not publishing a book. To me, the reason you publish a book is because it excites readers. And there's not even a focus group available, in modern publishing to get other people other than the bean counters. I'm sorry to sound so strident. But it just annoys me because we hear this so often now from people who approach us and who are leery of becoming only authors because they haven't yet made that transition from bound book to ebook in a way for themselves. But I hate to hear these stories of, I was told I'm not good enough because nobody knows who I am and I wrote a sad book. But those aren't reasons to publish somebody. They will find out who you are. It's a good book.
Well, yeah, but that, you know, for the commercial publisher does not think in terms of, at this point, whether it's good or not. The real question is, can I sell enough of them to make a profit?
But they don't even know how to sell these books. That's my issue with them. It isn't, I'm sorry again, I just get so upset about this, because to me, if you really love books, then you know how to sell this. This is the kind of book you should be selling. You know, this is the kind of book that will get people talking about something that's reasonably interesting and intellectually stimulating and will create curiosity about all kinds of other topics, whereas this focus on one type of book that everybody has to publish the same thing just is boring and is a constant, you know, so you make millions for some, but you then deprive all those mid-list people of places in bookstores, of the time and efforts of the marketing people, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, everybody knows this story. But it just seems to me it's so elitist, and it so underserves what we really need as readers. I'm not going to read a vampire book, you know, and then another vampire book, and then another vampire book. You know, I've read some. That's it. I have other needs.
Well, I think what you're doing, and probably what a number of other people are doing, is going to, over time, create new options and create new pathways. And I really do think, you know, we're poised for some big changes to occur in the way that books are published.
Right.
There's no question about that. I think Itinerant Book Show is a good example of that. I want to thank you, Deborah, for talking to me. This has been David Wilk for Publishing Talks. I've been talking to Deborah Emmon, who's the founder of Sullivan Street Press and a great project called the Itinerant Book Show. Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, David.